Welcome to this episode of Statum, a podcast for clinical partners. I'm your host, Richard Schooley. The purpose of this podcast is to connect dots that may not be apparent. You can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. On Statum today, we have Dr. Lucio Mincez. In 2023, Dr. Mincez created the Science of Practicing Medicine CME series, and in 2024, he'll launch a new Grand Rounds for clinical partners on Teams. The first Grand Rounds, by the way, will be on January 10th, and then monthly thereafter. As far as I know, no one asked him to create these clinical education opportunities. What I do know is that Dr. Mincez wants to have fun at work, and to him, learning is fun. Plus, from time to time, he likes to be reminded of how little he knows. And in a system as large as CentraCare, Dr. Mincez believes there should be standards of care and that data drive standards. Here's my conversation with infectious disease physician, Dr. Lucio Mincez. What people don't know, Dr. Mincez, is that you and I talk every week for the most part while we're producing your Science of Practicing Medicine series. And so in a bit of a turn of the tables, I'd like to welcome you to Statum and our podcast here today.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to being on the other side of the table.
Well, good. Well, let's start with the idea that there are, I don't know, some 900 clinical partners, and I don't know how many know you or your backstory. So give me a thumbnail sketch, if you will, of your clinical backstory. How did you get here?
So I'm from Argentina, and I came 18 years ago. I did my initial training in internal medicine in Wayne State, Detroit. And then I did infectious disease, HIV, in University of Pittsburgh. I did an extra year there as a chief fellow / HIV research. And then I stayed, I think, a little over a year doing transplant infectious disease there. And finally, I moved in October 2012 to Wilmar.
But like, who were your mentors? Who did you really learn from as a doc in training?
Oh, well, before coming in and after my medical school, I had to prepare for the exams to come here, including learning English, which I think within the next few years I'll accomplish.
You might get there.
Yes, yes. See. So I did research on HIV, so I had a few mentors, or one in particular, about basic research on HIV. And then, of course, my mentor for research while I was doing transplant ID, and I did some research on that, and she was the transplant ID division chief, Dr. Gwen Hong Wang.
So what I'm interested in connecting this is, you're a doc in Wilmer, you're a doc in CentraCare, and you're bringing forward education opportunities, continuing education opportunities. You didn't have to do that. So what I'm kind of wondering is, like, what's the burning platform inside you, right? Says you want to do this. Yeah.
So first and foremost, I have fun doing it. It's something that in medicine has been somewhat neglected. And along the way, I feel, and these are, of course, thoughts that I could reprocess and fine tune, right? It's the stuff that's coming up in my head about this right now. But I think we have forgotten that medicine is not a one-off thing, that you do your residency, your training, and then that's it. It's a continuously evolving field. In the more manual skills, and as always, we bring aviation, you need constant training so you not to lose your skills. In medicine, it's about updating knowledge. And I think somewhat along the way, we got very robust, or trying to get robust, and putting a lot of emphasis in two fields, which are satisfaction of the customer, two words that we are not trained for, and we don't know what that really means, and it's quite annoying for most people. And the other one is how to make this a better business, which is another thing that we didn't go to school for. So when it comes to being up to date, if you are on your own, you can do it on your own. But I think when you're a center as large as we are in CentraCare, You can formalize it, and your internal resources in particular, that would be your specialist, to update the primary force on what's changing. So people are aware of what's new, what's not up to date anymore. And I want to be clear that the reason why I always say the specialty training the primary force is because it is the job of the specialist to seek their own updates. You know, in other words, a specialist is not going to know, or is not expected to know, anything outside their area of expertise.
Right.
The primary force is to know a little bit about everything, as, and also when to seek for the specialist and what's new. Mm-hmm. So it is fair and necessary to offer that to the primary care force, because to me it's becoming overwhelming to know what your limits are, and there's so much out there that is new, even within specialties. You know, within my own field, you could focus on HIV, you could focus on surgical infections and on transplant infectious disease, and there's people who just do that.
Right. I'm going to plug your Science of Practicing Medicine podcast. The December CME and podcast, right, has Dr. Fred Hunt and Dr. Mm-hmm. Jesse Roski talking about and kind of tearing apart this idea of satisfaction and a customer and replacing it, I would say, having listened to it the other day, this sense of how you care for patients.
Yeah, and it so happens that that is the topic and of the month. And that's what they want to be clear, that this is not about satisfaction in the sense of that ethereal goal of something that you didn't do training for. This is, in their particular situation, is about using data to show that you can get a better outcome from the patient if you engage better with the patient. And that's better for the patient, makes your life easier, everybody happy.
Right. And it gives us an opportunity to talk about really why you've created the Science of Practicing Medicine. Mm-hmm. So data drives that particular podcast and CME series of yours, would you say?
For sure, yes. And that's another thing that medicine started shifting, I would say, a couple of decades ago. There's been an explosion of technological advances for diagnostic and therapeutic purposes. So almost is becoming extinct the concept of medicine as an art and a gut feeling, etc. It's becoming more and more of a data-driven area of care, and you can only get so much in your brain. So I think the two things that I want to make sure that are available to people from specialists is what's new and what can we offer to take off your plate, because now it's too complex to handle. I mean, even if you take something like cholesterol, for example, it used to be don't eat eggs and let's hope for the best, to then fibrates and things like that. Now you have statins, different kinds of statins. The data goes from use this one, use that one, this dose, that dose, this target, that target. You know, so extrapolate that to a million, and then you have the job of a primary care provider. So it's pretty overwhelming, I think.
Yeah. I love your idea there of essentially sharing a load. Like, you know, there are mm-hmm. experts and specialists in other fields that can share the most recent up-to-date knowledge with the primary care force. Yeah.
Yes. And also, another thing is, at the end of the day, you want to have fun doing your job, you know, and it never gets old to say that. So it's fun to learn. It's fun because it's like almost you're back in school when you had your main responsibility was to learn, not to code or something like that.
Yeah, I would think. You are an artist yourself, though. You're an accomplished guitarist. You come from artists. Your parents are both artists, musicians, as I recall. So I'll just ask you this question parenthetically. I mean, is there an art to medicine, to practicing medicine, in addition to the science of?
Well, to start off, I'm neither an artist, and by far I'm not an accomplished guitarist or guitar player, but, you know.
One would disagree, I've heard you.
Anyway, there is an art, yes. The thing is, okay, so you gain experience. Of course, you get an eye for things. You get a feel for things, right? But medicine is turning more into, and I'm sorry to bring this example, but I'm not the only one. Medicine does this. When a pilot flies around a storm, they have guidelines of getting not more than 20 miles from a cumulus nimbus. Mm-hmm. And you could be doing that for 3 years or having done for 35 years. That is a guideline. And you have your gut feeling, but the protocol will not allow you to get 5 miles within it because your experience tells you so. Now, of course, your experience allows you to fine-tune things, given what you have acquired over time. In medicine, we are starting to learn that concept, while before it was like, oh, I've been doing this for a long while. I think we can cross right through the cumulus nimbus. So nobody's going to argue that experience is essential, and there are times in which you look at a test and you say, I disagree with a test. A guideline can be malleable and adjustable. Of course it is. But more and more is how you use, how you look at that data and you interpret that data is becoming more center stage on how you go about patient care, I would say. And it varies, of course, depending on what specialty you do, mm-hmm. or if you do primary care and what kind of patient you have. But there are things that, of course, are experience. I think knowing when a patient is not telling you the truth, or
there you go.
Or how a relationship is going to go about. There's an entirely different world on how you relate to a patient when, for example, you do primary care versus being a specialist. Because these are people that you know sometimes their whole life, yeah. pretty much. They have a rapport with you that typically don't tend to have with the specialists, or at least that's my experience. Mm-hmm. So I speak within my area, right? But I see nothing but benefit in offering tools to people.
Indeed.
It's a win-win, you know.
And you're about to launch another opportunity that way. So what may not be known until now is that you are about to embark on a grand rounds for CenterCare.
Correct.
So give us the vision of grand rounds at CenterCare.
Yeah, so the grand rounds is something that I've been wanting to do for a long while. And for people who have experienced grand rounds through their training, they know it's fun. Grand rounds is just fun. It's doing medicine in a context in which you are just talking medicine. You don't have to sit down and type your report. You don't have a patient to satisfy. It's just talking science, you know, and you learn and you see other people's opinion. Hopefully there's some fighting. The trick is for people not to know when you're joking or not. That is an art. And hopefully learn from it.
Right.
And I always like, and this is my personal take, I'm not saying that this is something that people should agree with me, but I like sometimes to know how little, be reminded how little I know, let alone from time to time get scared and say, shoot, how I didn't think about that so-and-so is talking within the differential. So I think it will be fun. So the idea is that I get people to volunteer cases. Here's my advertisement for it. We will have that person present with just very straightforward slides the case, then open it for discussion, open microphone, like if we were in a big room, but now we have this technology. And after that, that person, and it's up to them if they want to invite an expert, can give a brief few minutes discussion. Okay, this was the diagnosis in case nobody cracked it, and this is what's new about it, etc. And it's historically fun to do it that way. It's like playing, you know, for you it would be baseball, but for me, playing soccer in your backyard, you know.
Fantastic. I love that metaphor even. So you're going to do this over Teams.
Correct. So it's a five-minute presentation, then the fighting, and then a 10-minute catching up at the end.
I love this agenda. That is fantastic.
Yes.
And the hope, right, is that this is invigorating.
That's the hope. I think getting a culture of learning. Everybody wants to learn, but the more we can make it accessible, the better. We are all human beings. The more I get older, the more I have children, they get older, and then I more and more I'm learning how difficult it is, right, to not have downtime. So if we can do it in a way in which you are sitting there catching up with your notes and you're having a sandwich and you're learning, and in between that you give your opinion. That's the idea of all the educational activities I'm talking about. But this one in particular, I will need people to not only volunteer cases, but also to join and discuss. Otherwise,
you'll have no one to fight with.
But yes, I won't fight with anybody. I'll just be the moderator. You know, if somebody breaks a rule, like kicking under the belt or you know, swaying at somebody with a stethoscope, It's my role.
That's your role in this, huh?
Yes, no stethoscope drawing and stuff like that.
I'm glad that there are boundaries. That's helpful.
Yes, yes. The rules will be written.
So you're asking for someone to come forward with the first topic and then a topic every month thereafter. Mm-hmm. And then people will be able to join on teams for 30 to 40 minutes.
And it's cases. It's cases. Basically, it's, you could pick. And it doesn't need to be a cryptic, complex case. I remember when I was a fellow, I presented a case of something that is very common, which is Staph aureus bacteremia, which is a bacteria in the blood, right?
Okay.
And I spent the whole discussion time in sharing how each attending will go about it. We spent a few minutes, and then I share a survey monkey that I had done in advance to that to share how each attending will go about. And at the end, I show how all the attendings were wrong. And none of them was following the guidelines, really, you know, and that was fun. So it doesn't need to be something unusual or rare, because even the more mundane day-to-day things, and this is what I get at with data, for example, there's only one best approach at this time for a blood pressure of a certain number in a certain individual of certain age, certain characteristics. 5 years ago, it was a different, 5 years in the future, it will be different. But right now, there's only one best approach.
Hmm.
And one thing that tends to happen a lot is you get different approaches. But for the long term, based on the data we have, there's always one best approach. And the way I always put it is, and again, a lot of people will disagree with me, right? But with Chase Upgrade, and in general, I always wonder why when you get on an airplane, you don't ask the flight attendant, hey, is the pilot good or I shouldn't get on the plane? But in medicine, we are very used to that.
It's true.
Is doctor and doctor good or whomever, PA or nurse practitioner?
You shop around a little bit, yeah.
But how do you judge that? Based on what? You know, it's weird. Why do we have to ask that? It should be one best answer. I know it's not the case and this is not aviation, right? I know. I'm just throwing it out there just for fun.
Interesting. And then if we continue down that path just a little bit, you have another podcast, almost like a satellite to the Science of Practicing Medicine that turns on next year as well.
Yes.
It's Information on the Go. Tell me more, though, about that particular podcast.
The idea was like when we do the series, we get 12 topics a year. They tend to be big topics, but gosh, you could be sitting all day learning new things that are out there. So there are certain updates that don't require a whole hour. It's not realistic to say, hey, now Lucio will do every day of the week, we'll get somebody to do an update. So this will be on the go podcast, much shorter, like, you know, around in between 10 and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Of an update of a very focal condition or update. So then by the end of the year, instead of having 12 available educational updates, we will have 24. And this we would offer some slides for people to read whenever they want and or to listen. This would be completely on demand. Of course, with the series that we do every month, also in the CME, I'm sorry, in the Grand Rounds, as well as in this mini podcast series, we will provide CME credits for all of these, which it helps.
Sure.
Actually, if people were to join the Grand Rounds and the series, you will have 2 CMEs every month. So you have 24. Well, we take a break probably in July, so let's call it 20 or something like that. CMEs, plus these mini podcasts, hopefully we'll be able to offer a quarter CME. But at the end of the day, it's just, Danny, here you go. I'm giving you a piece of cake that doesn't make you fat. Well, that's great. Sure, I'll have it.
I mean, who can say no to that?
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap up with the question you often ask your guests on the Science of Practicing Medicine podcast. Dr. Mintzes, is there any final thought you'd like to leave with your colleagues?
As I was telling you the other day, I think when you're large enough, whether you're affiliated to a university or not, you could have ongoing education to standardize care. There's something that I would really like to see is that over time, people are able to say, this is how we do it here. This is what we have learned over time, etc. So this concept of leveling off approaches and attitudes toward learning, etc. It's what I'm aiming for. And I'll admit I have an easy job because it's what people like. I think the hard job is to get people to say, I know you don't like to do it, but we have to do it. I'm just a messenger. Lucky for me, that's not the case. My lack of charm would set me for failure on that, for sure. I'm charmless.
Last question before we end for our time today. Your favorite Mark Knopfler song?
My favorite Mark Knopfler song is a Dire Straits or solo? It's a trick question.
Up to you.
I will tell you, the reason why I started playing guitar is because of the song The Bug from the 1991 album. I think it's 91, On Every Street. It's called The Bug.
Fantastic. Dr. Lucio Mintzes, I want to thank you for joining me today on Statum.
Thank you for the great question and always fun talking with you.
It's always a pleasure. As a reminder, the first Grand Rounds will be on January 10th and then every month thereafter, and always available on Teams. The same is true for the monthly Science of Practicing Medicine series. You can even find past topics as part of an enduring CME series on one.centricare.com. Something Dr. Mintzes and I didn't talk about is a new 15-minute clinical updates podcast. Every month, he'll interview a different clinical partner colleague at Centricare to share data-driven insights and best practices. If you'd like to present a case at Grand Rounds or be a guest on clinical updates, just email Lucio. Next week, I'll talk with Dr. Jessie Roski, who said recently she was called a disappointed optimist. In our conversation, Dr. Roski is clear about two things. One, customer satisfaction is not the answer in healthcare. And two, she did not go to med school to become a provider. Beyond that, she speaks passionately and articulately about the patient's experience and how making a human connection is essential for both clinician and patient. Until then, take good care.